Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sparty Talk, everyone. I am Satchmo, coming to you live from Michigan State Spartans regional headquarters, Spartan Nation's regional headquarters in New England, and reporting live from Ann Arbor in the belly of the beast is the one, the only DB. DB, welcome.
Greetings, Spartan Nation.
Yes, Spartan Nation. DB is in the belly of the enemy, in the belly of the beast, where he went, where he attended the big chill last night in the latest embarrassment for Spartan hockey. If everyone remembers their history, and if they don't, you know, let me refresh it. Michigan State introduced a whole wave of outdoor hockey games. With a game in Spartan Stadium where they tied the University of Michigan. But that was the first outdoor hockey game in quite some time. The NHL hadn't been doing that. Nobody had been doing that. It was a Mark Hollis brainchild and creation. And after that game, it set a new world record for attendance at a hockey game. And after that game, also the NHL caught and said, wow, this is really cool. They started doing it. Everyone started to get in on the act, and the University of Michigan decided to get in on the act this year in 2001, right, DB? Was that it?
That's right.
In 2001, it was the Cold War, and the Cold War ended up in a draw. This time around, it was the Big Chill, and the Big Chill ended up in a 5-0 drubbing. The University of Michigan looked like they were the better team from the moment they stepped foot on the ice, and it doesn't look like this. It would have mattered if this game had been played in Yost, in Spartan Stadium, at Munn, or as it was played in the Big House. DB, you were there on the field. First of all, give us a sense of the atmospherics and what it was like watching the game in such a big stadium.
Well, Satchmo, it was like kind of going to a Michigan State, Michigan football game in the Big House, in a sense. You had all these people tailgating. You had the smells of grilled food in the air. The tailgates, of course, not as good as the ones in East Lansing, mind you, but there were Spartans and Wolverines happily tailgating alongside one another, which was nice to see in the spirit of the holiday season. You had many people with their hockey jerseys on versus any football paraphernalia, which was good to see because we were at a hockey game, not a football game. And, yes, it was inside not as cold as I expected it to be, but I was dressed appropriately with layered clothing. I was very close to the field. I would have been, Satchmo, if you can visualize it, at the 15-yard line behind the Spartan bench. In the fourth row at a football game. So football seat-wise, that would have been great. Hockey seat-wise, I had a little trouble seeing the whole rink when the play was on the other end. I couldn't see the play when Michigan was shooting at the Spartans for two periods and vice versa for the second period. But it was great. You know, what was most interesting to me, Satchmo, was the lack of sort of bitter trash talking that was going on. People were very civil to one another in the stadium. I was very intrigued by this. There wasn't a lot of smack talk going on between
well,
the fans.
It's easy to be civil when you know you're going to win.
and the Spartan fans obviously know who the better team is right now, unfortunately. But I will say this for the Michigan State turnout, Satchmo, it was very good. I would say there were several thousand Michigan State fans there, and I was in the Spartan cheering section right behind the abbreviated version of the Spartan marching band that was there, which was great. And so from a turnout standpoint for Michigan State, they made a lot of noise, and we came out cheering at least.
Yes, well, and I'm sure a good time was had by all. Ice conditions, DB, what were they like? Was it choppy? Were players having a tough time skating? Well, what was going on with that?
I actually will give the University of Michigan some props on this. The first thing that they did, and they had several weeks to work with because their last football game was against Wisconsin before Thanksgiving, they started setting up the rink right after that game. and they actually played on it for about a week, or actually a couple weeks. They had some high school, a week worth of high school games last week, and a couple of like Division III college teams, like Adrian College, played some games on it, and so they worked it in. The Wolverines got to practice on it all week. You know, they got to kind of test it. Red Berenson, their coach, actually got it and tested it last week, and then the players got on it this week and they practiced. The Spartans didn't hit it until Friday, and that I'll get to a comment on that in just a couple minutes. But the conditions actually, I'll give Michigan some credit for this. The ice conditions were very good. The ice looked like it was very smooth. And that part of it, I don't think was an issue at all.
Okay. Well, that's good, because ice conditions are always the big thing in that way. When you're playing outdoor hockey, as long as the ice conditions are good, everything else is fine. You can deal with anything else. Now, you're there. You're at the game, but you also noted that the Detroit Red Wings, who have played in an outdoor hockey game themselves, we're feeling quite bitter about not being part of the Big Chill. What's going on there?
Yeah, there was some hard feelings apparently conveyed through the Detroit media by the Red Wings, their coach Mike Babcock, and even a couple of the Red Wings themselves. The captain Nick Lidstrom spoke about it, and the Red Wings felt sort of miffed that they couldn't be included in this outdoor game somehow, that they would be maybe playing either the night before against Montreal or one of their original six rivals, or maybe the same night after that game, or maybe even on Sunday, keeping the rink up and playing against someone. And they felt sort of excluded, and Babcock even went so far as to say, hey, the NHL wouldn't have had to do any work. The rink was right there. Michigan and Michigan State did all the work for this, and you know we felt we should have been a part of it. I thought that was interesting, Satchmo, that the Red Wings felt so miffed about this.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, and I've got a couple theories behind it, hear me out on this, DB. I think I think part of this is that that the Red Wings have been part of a couple of outdoor hockey games, actually. And I think the players really like the outdoor hockey game. I think they really enjoy playing outdoors. It's a return to their childhood. It's a return to their roots. And anytime they have the opportunity to do it, they want to do it. So that's the first part. The second part is the Red Wings really take being sort of part of the fabric of Detroit seriously. And not just the organizations, but the players themselves. These are all players that have come from other parts of the world, whether it's Canada, Sweden, Russia, wherever, or in different parts of the U.S. But they've all come from different parts of the world, and they've made Detroit their home. And not only have they made Detroit their home, when they've had chances to leave, they've stayed. They really feel like Detroit is their home, their community. This is their corner of the earth, and they love it. And when opportunities like this come up, they want to be able to take part in repping Detroit. And it's something that I think is very unique for the Red Wings. If you take a look and up and down the Red Wings roster, you've got guys that have been playing here for years or originally from the area, but they're all from everywhere. And they all love being Detroit Red Wings. They all love being Detroiters. And it's one of the cool things about the Red Wings. There is a much closer tie between the players on the Red Wing and their identity as Red Wings and the players on the Red Wings players and their identity as Detroiters or Detroit area, southeastern Michigan people, than there is in other hockey squads. So I think they felt a bit disappointed in that. And I think the third thing that falls into play here is it goes to the difference between Mark Hollis, who is a great athletic director, and I would argue one of the top five athletic directors in the country. I think he's that good. And David Brandon, who's just on the job in his first year at the University of Michigan. Mark Hollis is always looking, how do I make this bigger and better? How do I make this more entertaining? How do I get more people in the community involved? If you look at, I mean, any time Michigan State does something in Detroit, like this game against Florida Atlantic, they had a week's worth of activity in Detroit for, I mean, just for the game. If Mark Hollis was putting this show on, there's no way he doesn't get the Red Wings involved. That's the first those are the first people he calls. I mean, Mark Hollis is a guy, along with Tom Izzo, that's trying to get a basketball game in an aircraft carrier.
Right.
The Michigan State as a program, and this is Mark Hollis at work, they think bigger, better, larger, and they also value that community tie. Whereas at the University of Michigan, it's about the University of Michigan. It's about Big Blue. And that's always been the mentality there. And now that might change, and it's not about the ties back to the community. That might change under Brandon. Who knows? He's only in his first year on the job, and he might turn out to be a fine athletic director and one of the best University of Michigan's ever seen. I have no idea. But we know about Hollis and Hollis's track record. If Hollis had been running this event, the Red Wings would have been involved.
Yes.
So we agree on the.
Yes.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, and I was going to say too. I was also going to add to you're right on point, and going back to the Cold War when Hollis was just the marketing director at Michigan State. And by the way, I wanted to add in too that the actual real brainchild of this outdoor, the guy that this can really be traced to at Michigan State of all people, is former Spartan assistant coach David McCullough, who used to be an assistant under Ron Mason, who was just sort of in a late-night chat with his fellow assistant Tom Newton one time when they were looking at game tape, and he said, you know, we should play one of these games outside sometime. And then they brought it to Hollis, and Hollis made it happen. And as you say, Satchmo, and to tie it back to what you're talking about with the Red Wings and things, I think if this game would have been in East Lansing, Satchmo, the Red Wings would have been playing because the Spartans have a good close tie-in with the Red Wings, and Gordie Howe dropped the puck before the Cold War game back in 2001. I think definitely, and also with the fact that Justin Abdelkader and Drew Miller, former Spartans, play for the Red Wings, I think, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Spartans consider to try to play one of these games again in the next 5 years at Spartan Stadium. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to do this again, whether it's against Michigan or something else, and then tie the Red Wings into it somehow. You wait and see. Maybe that could happen based off of this.
Yeah, and you want to know what? I'm sure part of Babcock's response to all this had something to do with the fact that he had two Spartans on his team.
Yeah.
Who probably wanted to go to the game and wished that the Red Wings were playing up there too.
Yeah,
I have no doubt that was part of it. And wasn't one of those guys part of the Cold War game?
No, they had come along after. But, you know, one notable name, Satchmo, that I'll bring up from the Cold War. And by the way, I will give the University of Michigan some more props. I bought one of the game programs. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I contributed $10 to U of M to whatever, wherever that money goes. I know. It's all right. But anyway, they did have a very nice piece in the article written by former Ann Arbor News, now defunct Ann Arbor News writer Antoine Pitts, who did a nice article. He covered the Cold War back in 2001 for the Ann Arbor News as a Wolverines beat writer. And he did a nice piece in there and talked about Dave McCullough coming up with the idea from the Spartans. And the winning goal, or I should say the tying goal, with 47 seconds left in that infamous game, which Ryan Miller was playing goal for Michigan State, was scored by none other than Jim Slater, who was a freshman at the time, now plays in the NHL for the Atlanta Thrashers. And there was a lot of nice comments in there from Slater, and even some of the Michigan players who played in that game at that time that were freshmen, that some of whom went on to play in the NHL, that talked about what a great memory that was and what a great job Michigan State did to put that game on. And Red Berenson, I remember from covering that game as a media person, Red Berenson really was very, very thrilled with how that went at Spartan Stadium and gave Michigan State a lot of credit for how it turned out, and it was a very nice event that night, and very cold at the beginning of October, and this one was good too, other than the results on the ice for the Spartans.
Yeah, well, and the thing you have to remember about that game and why everyone has been so complimentary is it had never been done before. Not
yeah.
on that scale, not in the NHL, not in college hockey, just hadn't been done. And
yeah.
this was a huge deal.
Yeah, and as you said, Satchmo, it set the stage for these winter classic games that the NHL now does. And really, you know, the Spartans were kind of the guinea pig with it. And yeah, they had some issues with the ice that night, you know, 10 years ago. They didn't have all the technology that they have now to really get this down. The technology then was better than it was, you know, 10 years prior to that to even consider doing it. But, you know, the Spartans and Mark Hollis and everyone at Michigan State set the tone for this from a marketing perspective. And, you know, and the Spartans are doing it again with this aircraft carrier game. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the NBA, which needs to liven up their product a little bit, glom onto this as well. So the Spartans are another trendsetter in that regard.
Are you predicting an outdoor game for the NBA?
I think so. I think something like that could be I think people would get very excited about that. To put the NBA product into different places like that might be something that, you know, maybe livens it back up again.
Very interesting. All right, we've got a lot of show to get to today because we're going to spend some time talking about the Michigan State basketball team. We're also going to spend some time on the college football coaching vacancies and a lot of stuff, other stuff going on in college sports in general. But we can't leave our hockey discussion, DB,
mm-hmm.
without talking about the one, the only, Rick Conley.
Yeah. Can't leave a Spartan hockey discussion right now without talking about Rick Conley, can we?
And one of the reasons I bring it up is I had to suffer through Jalen Rose yesterday.
Oh.
And for, I don't know.
Boo.
Yeah, boo indeed. I don't know if any of you caught the late night Sports Center last night, but Jalen Rose was on with Linda Cohn breaking down the Michigan State hockey game.
Wow. What? Why was Jalen Rose?
Yeah.
I didn't see that. Why was he breaking down the Michigan State hockey game?
Because he was a Michigan alum.
Oh,
apparently
please. He probably never set foot in Yost.
I'm sure he never set foot in the Yost. And I'll give Jalen credit. Jalen's very charismatic. And Linda Cohn asked whether he knew how to. He's like, oh no, I don't know how to do. I can roller skate. And then he started like naming roller rinks in Northville and things like that. It was very funny. Very charismatic. But he was on the air crowing about Michigan's 5-0 win. And about how great this win was for the University of Michigan, especially because it came against Michigan State. And, you know, Michigan's been struggling against Michigan State, and it felt real good to get this win against our rivals. He was all over it. I mean, he was over the moon. And I was just sickened. It was disgusting.
Let's put it in context here, Satchmo. Michigan's hockey team, and don't get mad at me, Spartan Nation, but this is a fact. Michigan's hockey team is in a place right now that Michigan State can't touch. They're a top 10 program, top 15 program consistently right now, top of the CCHA, where Ron Mason used to have the Spartans, and they're no longer there.
Yes. The key word is where Ron Mason used to have the Spartans.
Yeah.
Used to. All right, let's take a look at some numbers regarding Mr. Rick Conley.
Oh, Satchmo's done some research here. I like this.
Oh, yeah. So, Satchmo's done some research here. And, you know, I'll preface this by, in Spartan fans and Spartan Nation, hear me out on this. As fans of the program, as fans of our teams, we have to hold our coaches more than our players, because the players are just playing their hearts out. we have to hold the coaches accountable for what's going on in these programs. We just do. And it's part of why, and not only that, but we also have to have certain expectations for our program. And it's always struck me as odd that we're completely okay with, say, this year, Michigan State losing 3 out of 4 games to ranked teams under the assumption that, they'll be okay in November. I mean, they'll be okay in March. You want to know what? I want them to win those games in November.
Yeah.
That's that. Really? Come on. Win the games. You know.
Yeah.
I want to beat Duke. Or I want to go to my fantasy football league and be able to talk smack with a Dookie that I'm supposed to be beating this week on the field. but I mean, and on a more serious note, it's more than that. And DB, I recommend this highly. Last night, I watched the documentary Pony Excess. It's
okay.
The 30th. It's the one of the series of 30 and 30 that ESPN's producing. And it was a 2-hour documentary. And let me tell you what, it was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I just sat mesmerized by the whole thing last night. And it details what happened at Southern Methodist University, starting from the mid-70s into the late 80s and SMU getting the death penalty. And what the death penalty did to SMU football, not only that, but what it did to the alumni, and more importantly, what it did to the players who were graduates of SMU. These are guys, Eric Dickerson, and, I mean, people like to make fun of Eric Dickerson. Let me tell you what, you have to watch Eric Dickerson in this. He is insightful, he's smart, he's intelligent, he's funny. If this was the Eric Dickerson that was doing television in the NFL a few years back, he'd still have his job. I mean, he was that good. And they asked him if you had the choice to play, and he played high school football in Texas too. He said if you had the choice to play Friday, go back and just keep playing. Would you be playing Friday nights, Saturdays, or Sundays in the NFL? And he chose Saturdays. That's just how much he loved SMU and how much he loved college football. And since June Jones has come in, he's invited all the former players back, and every one of them loves it. They're all buying tickets. They're all back around the program. The program is good. Eric Dickerson said that when June Jones, that bowl game that they won last year, he said that's the first college football game he's watched all the way through in 20, 30 years. And he watched that game. He watched that game. He watched the post-game analysis and breakup. He read all the news coverage about it. He was that into it. That's what college sports does. That's how people feel about their schools and their college teams. And I want to feel like that about Michigan State hockey. And I just can't. I just can't, and I don't. It's why, DB, you and I are going down to the bowl game in Orlando.
Yeah.
That's how we feel about Michigan State football. It's why I'm sitting there sweating out a 77-76 win over OU in basketball yesterday. And it's why we want the Spartan hockey team to be great. And unfortunately, not only is it not great, it is nowhere near great right now.
Yep.
And you have to trace it back to Rick Conley. And so, did Rick Conley win a national championship? Yes. But even that year, his team was a fluke. It was a talented team that played mediocre hockey all year long, ran on a hot streak in the NCAA tournament, and won the national championship. Rick Conley's winning percentage at Michigan State, DB. Any guesses?
I'm going to say it's under 500. I'm going to say it's like 420.
No, it's actually 53%.
Oh, okay.
53%.
Mm.
Rod Mason's winning percentage, DB.
79%.
He was at 70%.
Okay.
That's a 17% drop.
Yeah.
We've gone from a team that's won 70% of its games to a team that's winning about 50% of its games.
Yep, Go ahead, sorry.
Michigan State can't settle for 500 hockey. 50%
no.
is 500 hockey.
No.
What's the Rhett Barrington's winning percentage?
Oh, I'm going to say it's around the same as Ron's, maybe a little better.
Yeah, a little better. It's a shade over 70%.
Yeah. Well, this is what's happened, Satchmo. And, you know, Satchmo, I'm going to say this because, and I love Ron Mason, and I loved Ron Mason. He was coach. I'm not sure I liked Ron Mason completely all the way through as the athletic director. The hiring decision that he made, starting with John L. Smith with the football team, which was turned out to be a disaster, and then simply just naming Rick Comley, his longtime friend, as the coach of the Spartan hockey team, he needed to really put his ego aside and let somebody come in and run the program. Now, from what I understand, there was an offer made to University of Denver coach and former Mason assistant back in the 80s with the Spartans, George Gwozdecki, who went on to have a tremendous coaching career, kind of put Miami hockey, Miami, Ohio, on the map, and then went out to the University of Denver and has made them a top-10 program. There was an offer made initially to George Gwozdecki when Ron was about to retire, but there was a combination of things going on there out of the Spartans' control partially, and that was that George Gwozdecki and his wife were very happy in Denver. That's a nice city, and they didn't want to leave. So that part you can't control. The other part was the salary offer was bogusly low. To come take over the Spartan program. And so, but there were other good coaches out there, namely one former Spartan hockey player under Aime Aubusson back in the 70s, Jeff Jackson, who took the Lake Superior program from nothing to a top-10 program. And he was available. And, oh, by the way, he coaches Notre Dame. And I'd love to know his winning percentage at Notre Dame because I'm sure it's quite good. I think they've only missed the NCAA tournament maybe once, maybe twice, maybe
yes.
in his first year since he's been coach of Notre Dame. They've sniffed the finals. They got into the finals. They didn't win the NCAA title, but they got close. But they've had tremendous success. They are at the top of the CCHA now. They're where I feel Michigan State should be. And the roles are reversed here a little bit. And I'm not discrediting
right.
Notre Dame hockey, but Notre Dame hockey is coming on, and they are not going away.
Right, David.
So I think a bad hire was made there with Rick Comley.
All right, I'm going to read attendance figures to you. And I'm going to start with the 1991-1992 season.
Okay.
Average attendance, 1991-1992, 6,559. 92-93, 6,448. 1993-1994, 6,392. It's 6,000 a year when Mason's there. Now,
yeah.
It peaks 2001-2002 at 9,836, but that was because of the Cold War.
Yeah.
Then Comley, what, took over 2002-2003
yeah.
season or 2003? Yeah. So he inherits a program that gets 6,000. By 2004, 2005, it's 5,675. The following year, it's down to 5,079. Then you're at 5,768, 2006, 2007. 5,507, 2008. 2008, 2009,
5,473.
2009, 2010, 4,966.
Oh, and that's after the national title.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
this
the biggest.
This is a program on the decline.
That is the biggest thing right there, Satchmo. You hit it on the head. When the attendance starts to go down, something is really amiss, and especially after a national championship. And Comley, and I've said this before, Rick Comley is a good man. He's a great person to talk to from a media standpoint. But what I get from Rick Conley, and I was going to come back to this. Remember, I mentioned earlier about the Spartans only had one day to practice on the ice at the Michigan Stadium.
Yes.
Conley takes things like that and makes them excuses. Conley will take, well, we only had a day to practice, and we really couldn't practice because the players were so wide-eyed and blah, blah, blah. You want to know what? Ron Mason would never have allowed that. Ron Mason would have said, let's get out here and focus after you're out here for an hour and you're wide-eyed, and we'll get some extra practice time out here. Or we'll come down on Thursday, and we'll get time to get out here and get you wide-eyed and look at the stadium and get all, you know, into it and get that out of the way. And then we're going to have a good hard practice on Friday. And Conley used that as an excuse. Right off the bat, that was an excuse. And so was this team unprepared? I don't think it was unprepared, but the problem goes back to, one, he's sort of let this thing go to a point that now people aren't caring about hockey anymore, which is a shame, as you just stated with your attendance figures dropping really badly. And then the other thing is he's not recruiting any blue-chip talent. I went down through the rosters of Michigan and Michigan State prior to this game, and Michigan has somewhere in the neighborhood of 12 to 13 NHL draft-eligible players, some of whom are very good, and some of whom, to their credit, stayed around for their senior year. Good for them. They have 9 seniors on their team, so they're loaded. And they've had that problem, too, with seniors and juniors leaving the program early. But the difference is Red Berenson recruits enough blue-chip talent that the pipeline continues to flow through, that even if you lose a few guys off the end that are really good, you still have some other guys that are kind of growing and moving along, and they're good blue-chip players. Conley has maybe one blue-chip player on his team who's a backup goalie. That's it. There's nothing else. And he's had very few of those in the last few years, sans the Justin Abdelkader and Drew Miller that I mentioned, and that's it. And he just sort of maybe lucked into those guys. And so I'm seeing all these things coming to the front now with the attendance drop and the mediocre play and the lack of blue-chip talent and his change in recruiting philosophy that he's not even going after these kids. And that's just hurting the program. You've got to at least try to go after these kids. And Mark Hollis then needs to stand back and go, okay, something's wrong with my hockey program. It's not working. It's time to bring in someone, maybe a younger guy, maybe a former Spartan out there. Maybe it's a Kelly Miller who used to play for Ron and they won a national championship. Or maybe it's a Dan Cole who has really amassed a lot of experience coaching in the college ranks with the University of Alabama, Huntsville, and he's a former Spartan under Ron. A guy like that could come in and really energize Munn Arena again and this program. I don't understand what the hesitancy is to do that other than maybe would it offend Ron? Does Mark Hollis need to go down to have a meeting with Ron Mason and get his blessing to do this? Is that what's holding this up, Satchmore?
I don't know, but I mean, I will say this. When Ron was the coach, 27 wins in a season was guaranteed.
Yeah.
You just got 27 wins in a season. That's what you did. All right, here's what Conley's done. 23 wins, 23 wins, 20 wins, 25 wins, 26 wins, 25 wins, 10 wins, and 19 wins.
And no CCHA title, right?
No CCHA title.
Right.
No.
Yep. And that year you mentioned, Satchmo, that we won the national championship. And this is what I get, Satchmo. This is very strange. And this isn't just University of Michigan alum people who are in the media. This is also Michigan State alums, and this is national college hockey people, Satchmo, who have their pulse on college hockey, who know a lot about what's going on and have no tie to any CCHA team, much less Michigan State. They think Conley is well-regarded. And I'm baffled by that assertion. I am truly astounded that people think that about Rick Conley. I mean, the jig is up with Rick Conley here. I mean, you know, he really is just not a right. You know how somebody's just not a right fit for something? Like, it's very similar to John L. Smith, the parallels. Rick Comley yep. was what he was at Northern Michigan, and that was fine. But it is not fine anymore for Michigan State hockey. It is not fine. And it's really it's really sad. It's really sad.
I mean, let me put it to you this way. If Mark D'Antonio has a 3-win team next year, which is basically what a 329, a 4-win team next year, and, you know, you think everyone's going to be howling?
No, well, yeah.
Everyone's going to be howling. No one's going to care that he won 11 games this year.
Right.
But why isn't everyone howling at a 329 winning percentage last year? And even you want to know what? Even that 329 top, I mean, is inflated. It's even lower than that. The Michigan State media guy calculates it differently than I would. But that's besides the point. They won 10 games 2 years ago. They won 19 games last year. This is bad.
Yeah, well, and then to make it worse, Satchmo, you had a team last year that's actually – solid. They had a few guys on the team. Corey Tropp, NHL caliber kid. Jeff Petrie left early to go to the pros. Those are more things that Conley uses as excuses that why the program's not, you know, is where it is. And I will say this, in Conley's defense, that is happening to a lot of programs. But the upshot of that is what I just said about Red Berenson in Michigan and some of these other places, like Jeff Jackson. Jeff Jackson in Notre Dame, he's had that happen. Notre Dame's been loaded up with top players.
You
want to
know every program has that happen. Every program has that happen. You want to know what? That's the way college hockey is. They come, they play for a couple of years, they go pro.
Yeah, and you have to adapt to that.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
There's no complaining about it. That's the way it is. It's like that for every program. It's not like people just woke up and said, we're going to leave Michigan State, but we're not going to leave Michigan and Colorado.
Now, I will give me a break. Right. Now, I will say this. All of the college coaches are unhappy about that. It's not just, you know, Comley. They're all, you know, Red Berenson's not happy. So there is a movement afoot, and I don't know how far it's going to go. There's a movement afoot by the college hockey coaches to go to the NHL and try to institute, with the NHL Players Union's blessing, some sort of 21 and over rule like the NFL has. So you have to have 3 years of experience either on the collegiate level or be 21 years old in order to enter the pro ranks. Now, that doesn't guarantee a guy is going to be going to college necessarily, but if you get a Justin Abdelkader kind of guy, although he did stay 3 years, at Michigan State, but you know, you get one of those types of guys coming to your program, maybe he's going to stay for 3 years. I don't know. I know the college part of some of this with college hockey players, the college part doesn't sit well with them because they got to go to class and stuff like that, and you know, that's not necessarily what they like. They like hockey, so you know, it's not going to be necessarily something that all hockey players want to do. But anyway,
yeah, but as you said, it's no excuse. It's no excuse. I mean, look, I'm not advocating that Michigan State fans become like Texas football fans or Florida football fans, where in Texas they ran the offensive coordinator out of town, who's been a great offensive coordinator the past 5-6 years. Or in Florida, where they're giving Urban Meyer heat after a great run that he's had here. I mean, I have there. And, yes, Urban Meyer's no longer the coach there, but – it is besides the point. Urban Meyer shouldn't be getting heat for a transition year. It just shouldn't be. We're not giving Conley heat for a transition year. We're giving Conley heat for sucking.
Yeah. That's the bottom line, yeah.
Bottom line, mediocre hockey is not acceptable, and that's what we're getting.
And you know this. And Satchmo, full disclosure here, you know this. And we argued about it before. I was a Conley supporter up until maybe last year or 2 years ago. I was supporting Conley fully because I do like the up-tempo style and everything. But I think the problem now is he's trying to force that style into a team that's not ready for that style. And when I was watching that game yesterday, there's a lot of little fundamental things that they're not doing on the ice. They're not getting butts in front of the goalie. They're not being physical enough. They're not hitting enough. You never saw that with Ron.
No. With Ron Mason, here's what you got. You got a fundamentally sound team that hit, that checked, that played defense, and when they went on the power play, they put pucks in the net. You got a team that everyone was afraid of because they had, in addition to the physicality, they had so much skill on the ice that you gave them an inch of room and you got killed.
Yeah.
That's the way hockey was under Ron Mason. When you went to a Michigan State hockey game when Ron was coaching, you knew you were watching college hockey at its finest. You were watching one of the best coached teams in the country ply its trade, and it didn't matter what the final score was, 1-0, 3-2, 4-1, or 7-2. You walked out saying, wow, what a hockey team. You want to know what? You go to a game now with Michigan State, and you're like, oh, boy, can I go home yet?
And that's the way I felt by the end of this game, Satchmo. And I wasn't being a poor loser. I mean, I didn't expect Michigan State to win. I tried to sit out there through the whole time. About 3 minutes left, the group that I was with said, well, let's just go. You know, and there was Michigan people in that group. So, you know, it wasn't necessarily all Sparties. It does make you feel kind of, oh, well, like who cares about Spartan hockey a little bit. You know,
that's a shame. Michigan State, Michigan hockey used to be an event.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be an event. It used to be talked about for weeks, days coming up to the games. Opposing fans would try and crash into the game because tickets were impossible to get. There was bad blood. It was high energy. It was high. It was unbelievable. And now it's just nothing.
Yeah, it is nothing. And Satchmo, here's one that you just won't like to hear. Here's another number, and then maybe we'll just leave Spartan hockey aside for now. But 8-3-0, that is the record Michigan has over Michigan State over the last 2 years.
There it is.
So if that doesn't boil your blood, if that doesn't boil your blood, then I don't know. Then maybe you're not a Spartan. I don't know what else to say.
I don't know. 8-3-0. That's just unacceptable.
Yeah,
that is just unacceptable. And Mark Hollis, if you're listening to this, you know we love you. But if we run into you in Orlando, we will talk to you about this.
Absolutely.
And it's not – absolutely. And Spartan fans listening to this, understand, it is not out of the ordinary for Satchmo to run into athletic directors at bowl games. I'm not saying I stalk them because I don't. I don't stalk them. I just don't. And DB will attest to that. I go, I tailgate, I wander around the stadium, I have a good time. DB and I have been to many a bowl game.
Yeah.
I don't stalk them, but somehow I always end up running into the athletic director and having a nice conversation. I ran into Ron. Did I ever tell you this story, DB, about running into Ron outside? Yeah, I ran into Ron. This was his last year, I think, as a athletic director. I think that's right. It was at the bowl game. And full disclosure, everyone, I used to cover college hockey. And so I spent some time. I mean, DB still covers college hockey. Covering college hockey is now part of my past. Might be part of my future, but it's part of my past. Who knows what the future will hold, but I covered, I ran into Ron. I was wearing my green and white, my Michigan State gear, and all this sort of stuff. And I walk off to Ron, and he just looks at me. He goes, are you here as a Michigan State Spartan alum or a member of the press? And I said, Ron, good memory. He says, yeah, I know. You used to call me. I said, don't worry, I'm here. I go, Ron, don't worry, I'm here as an alum. He goes, okay, then I can talk to you. And then we went on to have a nice 25 to 30 minute conversation, which was very enjoyable. We spent some time catching up. I remember running into George Perlis at a bowl game when he was athletic director. That's what happens when you go to these bowl games. You run into the other alum, but you also run into Mucky Mucks and board of trustee members and athletic directors. And so it was interesting. It was a good time. And Mark Hollis, if I run into you, you and I are having a discussion. And DB will be right there. We're going to be having a discussion about Yeah, we'll be right in. We'll be expressing our discontent with the Spartan hockey program.
And so we will
leave it at that. You will hear more about the Spartan hockey program, I'm sure, in coming weeks. This will be a popular topic on Sparty Talk, but we'll let it go for now and shift our attention to basketball, DB.
Yes. While I was basking in the cold glow of outdoor hockey yesterday, Satchmo, you were following the Spartan basketball team, and they were caught in a tight game with a surprising opponent, Satchmo.
Yes, Oakland University. Now, this game was in Detroit. It actually wasn't Detroit. It was the Palace of Auburn Hills, home of the Pistons. Michigan State's good about this. They play Oakland every year. I think it's 5 years running they've played them. And they usually play them in the Palace or somewhere in the Detroit area. And Oakland University is in Oakland County. It's just, I mean, it's not far from the Palace. And so it's a good game for OU, and it's a good game for Michigan State in that it's played in an NBA arena. And so when the NCAA tournament comes in, this is yet another shooting backdrop. They played in Madison Square Garden. They played out in Maui. Now they played in the Palace. The more sort of weird, uncomfortable arenas you played in, the better it is come the NCAA tournament time, because you can adjust to the shooting backdrop more quickly. You can do different things. You're not uncomfortable playing in those places. And so they played there, and OU gave them all they could handle. The guy Benson inside for Oakland University, once again, Michigan State struggled, giving up points in the paint, but he had a double-double. And Michigan State ended up winning 77-76. A couple of late threes by OU provided the margin of victory there. So Michigan State was in control, but you can't feel good about this team, because this is the same team that went out and laid an egg against Syracuse
earlier in the Madison Square Garden. That was a big egg laying. Tom Izzo rightfully called that embarrassing, Satchmo. And that's another one. That, to me, Satchmo, let me ask you a question. Was that Syracuse loss more disappointing than the Duke loss in your mind?
To me, this whole preseason, this whole non-conference schedule has just been disappointing to me. And I'm not going to say that that's more disappointing than Duke loss. For me, the Duke loss was disappointing. The Syracuse thing was just embarrassing. It was a dunk drill. I mean, you've heard of layup drills. This was a dunk drill against Syracuse. They were in the first half. They were just dunking the ball at will, and this has actually become a big problem for Michigan State, in that they're giving up points in the paint in a big way, just in a huge way. OU had more points in the – Oakland had more points in the paint than Michigan State did yesterday by about six or eight. I mean, it's people are getting to the rim at will. You saw it in the Duke game, the freshman point guard, Kyrie Irving, who's now injured for Duke. But in the Michigan State game, got to the rim at will. Syracuse got to the rim at will. You're seeing big guys from other teams block shots left and right against Michigan State. What this season's boiling down to is, let's just assume, for the sake of argument, that Michigan State fixes free throw shooting and fixes its turnover problem. I'm going to posit right now that Michigan State is going to struggle on the glass, and more importantly, in almost every game, get outscored in the paint. And for two reasons. One is they don't seem to be doing very well defending the rim. People are beating Michigan State off the dribble. They're getting to the rim with ease. They're passing into the paint. And the big guys Michigan State has, the only capable post defender, it looks to me like, is Derek Nix. Anytime Derek Nix is in the lineup, he gives the opposing big guy problems. Delvon Rowe, people scoring at will against him. Adrian Payne, he's not strong enough. People scoring at will against him. Draymond Green, God bless his soul, he tries, but he's not big enough. Just not big enough. And plus, you need Draymond Green to go out and defend some of the more athletic three guys. Michigan's Garrett Sherman, he's getting pushed around. People are starting in too close. I mean, he tries, but people are scoring at will against him. Michigan State isn't blocking anybody in the paint, and people are beating the guards off the dribble to get to the bucket easily as well. It's killing Michigan State. And then on the offensive side of the ball, anytime a Michigan State guard gets into the lane, they're getting their shot blocked, or they're turning the ball over, or they're trying to kick it out and shoot for kick it out for a three-point shot. The Michigan State big men, they're getting their shots blocked in the paint. Garrett Sherman, I mean, he's the guy that's got to finish on the other side of the rim just so he doesn't get a shot blocked. Delvon hasn't shown anything all season long. This is a problem. If teams are going to outscore Michigan State in the paint all season long, it's making a run to the Final Four, making a run at the Big Ten Championship is going to be next to impossible.
Yeah, well, and that's a good point, Satchmo. And I think, you know, one thing with the basketball team here is the thing that alarmed me in that Syracuse game was they only played good for stretches. It was not a complete game, and they started, especially in the second half, just jacking up threes, you know. And I saw Izzo get mad at Corey Lucius at one point. He was, you know, there was no need to do it, and they start jacking up threes. And they've got the defensive stuff bothers me more than, you know, it's one thing not to be able to score in the paint all the time. I mean, you know, that's something that they have to try to do. But defensively, they've got to be better down there. And under Izzo, they've always been good down in that area. And that's got to somehow get fixed, if it can. You mentioned Derek Nix, Satchmo. I have some problems with this kid. I have some big concerns about him. He is, and I understand what you're saying. I've seen flashes this season. I saw some moments, but I'm not seeing enough from him. And the biggest problem I have with this kid is he just has this body language out there that he doesn't really look like he wants to be out there. He has this sort of I'm not listening to you, sort of I'm half there kind of thing, and I'm really disappointed with him.
Well, I'll tell you what, I disagree 100%. I will say this. Derek Nix's last two games against Syracuse and then against Oakland were his best two games of the year. He went in, he played solid defense. Solid defense. He was the only player, Derek Nix was Michigan State's best player on the court against Syracuse. Defended well, caught the one pass thrown to him, put up for points, hustled up and down the court. Granted, he looks weird running, but that's another matter. Lots of people look weird running. and so I'm not going to kill him for that. And against OU, once again, best post defender in the court. He looks like he's getting better. And, you know, part of the confusion is, you know, he hasn't played all season long, and a lot of it's his own fault, and he's just getting into the rotation. He's not sure where he fits in the offense. Sometimes when he gets the ball, it surprises him and he's not expecting it. Those are things, in my mind, that are going to work themselves out. I mean, I can understand him being frustrated. I'm okay with that. He's a kid that wants to play. And let me tell you what, when he's on the court, he's doing the things like playing defense and playing and grabbing rebounds that no one else on this team is willing to do right now. And to me, the solution is more Derek Nix and not less.
Yeah, that's a question I had for you, Satchmo, in terms of Derek Nix. Why aren't we seeing as much of him then on the floor if this is the case? I mean, why are the coaches all putting him in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where Derek Nix worked his butt off this summer. He really did. He worked his butt off this summer. He got his body into better shape, became a better basketball player overall, and had, as Izzo said, one of the best summers he's ever seen a player had, and easily the best summer of anyone on the team. And he showed up in fall. He showed up in training camp, and he showed up at Michigan State practice in the fall. and he was expecting to be given and rewarded a lot more for the summer he had, whereas the Michigan State coaching staff wanted him to continue to earn the time. And I think that really threw him for a loop. He felt like he put in the work, and he felt like he earned the reward, and his reward was, no, you've got to keep working hard to get the time you're going to get. And that's just the way it is in Michigan State basketball. And I think that threw Derek Nix for a loop. And he didn't handle it well. And I think he's gotten over not handling it well. And he's starting to put in the work again to make it better. And so I think as the season goes along, you're going to see Nix get more and more playing time. And by the end of the season, I think you're going to see that he's going to be a key contributor. In all of this. And let me tell you what, if Derek Nix is there and on the trip to Maui, they beat UConn. It's that simple. They beat UConn, but he wasn't, and they did.
And you know this, Satchmo, I ripped on Nix after the Duke game, and I've noticed those flashes a little bit from the Syracuse game. That I've softened my stance a little bit on the kid. If he comes around and does what you're saying, I'll reserve my judgment on him and give him a fair shake. I'll give him a fair chance. I want to give him a chance because, you know, we need that. We need that rebounder and the defender. And you know, Delvon Rowe is another one here, Satchmo. You hit it on the head. I'm disappointed with Delvon Rowe so far. I want to see more out of Delvon Rowe. I don't think he's doing enough out there.
Well, I think Izzo's disappointed with Delvon Rowe. I think everyone's disappointed with Delvon Rowe.
Yeah.
This was supposed to be the breakout year for Delvon Rowe. He was finally healthy. We were supposed to see what Delvon Rowe was all about. Because we know Delvon Rowe's tough, and we know he's gritty. But he hasn't given much in terms of production this year. It just hasn't been there. You take the Syracuse game as an example. The first play of the first half and the first play of the second half were Delvon Rowe errors. Turned the ball over, made mistakes, people blowing past them on defense. They're not rotating quickly enough. A lot of it falls on Delvon Rowe's shoulders. He's the new big guy. I mean, he's got to play big. He can't get pushed around in the game. He's got to stand up and play big. He's got to provide post presence. Someone in Michigan State has to be able to score in the post. And let me tell you what, two of the favorite whipping boys for Spartan fans over the past 6 years were Goran Suton and Raymar Morgan. All right. Fans just love to ride them and get them on their case. You want to know what? Right now, last year we realized how much we miss Suton. This year, fans are realizing how much we miss Raymar Morgan and just how good and how important he was to the program. All this dirty work that isn't happening right now, Raymar Morgan used to do it. He used to get those points in the paint. You want to know what? How many dunks are we getting? We're not getting any dunks.
Yeah.
The
only dunks we're getting right now are alley-oops. That's it.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
And there's no one finishing strong near the hoop. Raymar Morgan used to do that. Goran Suton needs to do that. Delvon Rowe needs to be that guy. He needs to inherit that mantle, and he hasn't done it yet right now.
I think we're running out of time, Satchmo, but I was going to throw one more thing at you here. Your thoughts on the what's turning into a very weird situation with the University of Michigan coaching position with Rich Rodriguez. And he did get a very warm reception yesterday when him and Big Ten Player of the Year what's his name, came out on the field. I'm totally blank on his name. Gerard Robinson. Yeah.
All right. And for those of you listening, we got about 60 seconds left of the show, or a live stream will end. But if you want to hear this discussion about Rich Rod and also the NCAA coaching situation at large, you can download our podcast. We're going to go a little over time. You won't be able to hear it on the live stream, but you will be able to hear it in the archive version. Rich Rod, this is really weird, isn't it? I mean, Brandon won't say yes or no on Rich Rod, and he says he's not going to evaluate him until the end of the season. And here's my thing for Brandon is, all right, I get that you don't want to evaluate him to the end of the season. I really do get that. But if you're bringing Rich Rod back, and you know you're bringing Rich Rod back, then don't you have to say cut bait now? I mean, I understand you'll save $2 million by firing him in January, and I get that. But if you know you're not bringing Rich Rod back, then cut bait now because you're affecting your recruiting class right now.
Yeah, it really is not a smart decision.
This isn't like 1975 where you roll into a recruit's house and say, we're Michigan, you're coming to school here. It doesn't work like that. You got to work hard to get a kid to come to school here. You're really hurting your recruiting situation. Now, that's if you know you're firing them, cut bait now. Just do it. If you know you're bringing them back, well, just tell everyone you're bringing them back so Rich Rod and his assistants can go coach and go recruit. And here's the other thing. If you're going to fire him after the bowl game and you know you're going to fire him after the bowl game, you're really screwing over the assistant coaches. These are people that have to feed families. And college coaching staffs are being put together right now. I mean, you don't think Will Muschamp down in Florida is going to be looking for good assistant coaches? You know, he might consider one of the U of M assistant coaches. Go ahead.
You know, here's the other thing, too, Satchmo, about this, and when you mentioned David Brandon, and I, you know, Spartan fans don't, you know, I'm not going to give this guy too many props because he's a Wolverine guy, but he is a smart man. He ran Domino's Pizza for a long time and turned that company around. And, you know, so he's a good businessman, but I think sometimes, and he's missing this a little bit, and it's probably his inexperience, I think he's got to play the political game here a little bit with Rich Rodriguez, in that even if he doesn't want to have him back, he needs to just sort of give some indication now so he doesn't lose everything completely that he does, and throw his arm around him in public and say, Rich Rodriguez is my guy. And even if he's not your guy, give him another year, or at the very least here, if you're going to really fire him and that's in your mind, don't tip your hand to that and just say, Rich Rodriguez is our coach for right now. Even if you just word it sort of that way, right now could mean today and only till January 1st, or right now could mean if he does well and in the future. And, you know, sit down at the end of the season with Rodriguez. Because the thing is, you're really destroying the relationship you have with your coach. And then the recruiting, as you're saying, is going well. The recruits are, I'm not sure. And I think Michigan did have a promising quarterback decide to decommit this past week and go to Wake Forest or something like that. And then there's rumors about another big running back that they have, who I think is related to Mike Hart coming out of Miami or Orlando. I think his name is D. Hart.
Mm-hmm.
This kid is now waffling on whether or not he wants to come to Michigan because the system could be different. And, oh, by the way, if you're really intent on hiring Jim Harbaugh, as you said a couple weeks ago, Satchmo, you are turning that into a brand-new rebuilding project that could take 2 or 3 more years to get off the ground. I mean, yes, it could be successful, but now you're going and turning the other direction with something completely different that could be really painful, and it's not being handled very well at all.
No, it's not being handled very well at all. It needs to be handled better. And it's tough. I feel bad for the U of M assistants. Rich Rod will be fine financially, and if he's fired, he'll get another job because he is a good football coach. But it's the assistants I feel really badly for. And the other thing is, right now, this is when you get a lot of good candidates interviewing. Well, I mean, you had Muschamp. Let's face it, if Michigan had fired Rich Rod right now, Muschamp would have been on their short list of coaches to talk to.
Yeah.
And instead of coming to Ann Arbor, he's headed to Gainesville. He's headed to the University of Florida to become the next head coach there. And how about Urban Meyer stepping down? How was that for a shocker?
He walked away from a lot of money, and I think it just shows the toll that especially college football, I think more than any of the other collegiate sports, really takes on people, Satchmo. You saw with what Mark D'Antonio had to go through this year and some other coaches that have, you know, kind of been through the grind. It's a tough thing, Satchmo. But I want to ask you, Satchmo, what did you think about the Muschamp hire at Florida?
Thought it was a great hire.
Yeah,
I thought it was a fantastic hire. I mean, Muschamp's a Florida guy. He's an SEC guy. He's a Gainesville guy. Grew up rooting for the University of Florida. He was head coach in waiting at Texas for a reason. And they went out and they found a young, aggressive, high-profile coach who's got the motor to keep University of Florida where it's at. I thought it was a really good hire, and I think it's interesting. Down at Vanderbilt, apparently Gus Malzahn, the Auburn offensive coordinator, has been offered the job there. And he could be taking his talents to the Commodores. I don't know if he's going to accept it or not, but they've made the offer. Vanderbilt clearly wants to be a bigger player in the national football scene than they are. And also a finalist down in Vanderbilt is one Coach Treadwell.
Oh, okay. He has interviewed for that job. I didn't know that.
He has interviewed for the job, and he's a finalist for the Vanderbilt coaching job. Apparently the job's been offered to Malzahn. That's been the reports. We'll see what happens. But no hire's been made there. But yes, Treadwell did get an interview down there, and he is one of the finalists. That's interesting that Treadwell was a finalist for an SEC job. But it goes to the level of respect and recognition he earned stepping in for D'Antonio.
Yeah, he did a tremendous job.
He gave some of the coolest press interviews I've ever seen. they were just fantastic. enjoyed them tremendously. So you've got that going on as well. You have the Miami coaching job available. This is interesting. I mean, you have 2 to 3 jobs in Florida available. I mean, it's got to kill the University of Michigan. You've got to kill David Brandon that, you know, in a year where the Michigan job might come open, it's not even the best job out there.
No. Although, Satchmo, I will go back to the Miami job for a second. I am surprised that this has sort of fallen down the map a little bit. I mean, I last read even this morning that they were interested maybe in hiring somebody from the CFL or talking to somebody from the CFL, and I'm forgetting the name. I don't know if you had
It's the Montreal Alouettes coach.
Okay.
He's an American. I mean, the guy had so much success there that actually he's been on the radar for a lot of college coaching jobs. It's just not just the Miami job. He's actually a really hot coaching commodity right now.
Does he have ties back to, like, the ACC, or did he go to Miami, or what's the story with that guy?
He has ties back to the States. I just don't know what they are.
Oh, okay.
But he does have ties back to the States.
Huh? By the way, we missed this. I wanted to bring it up. Speaking of coaching vacancies that were filled, Minnesota went and got the coach from Northern Illinois, Kill. I forget his first name. I believe they hired him. What did you think of that?
I think it's a good, solid hire for Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. They went into a good Division I school that's built up a solid program. The Salukis have been threatening the top 25 or in the top 25 a fair amount recently.
They produced some tremendous players, too, into the NFL. Michael Burner Turner, I believe, came out of Northern Illinois.
He's obviously skilled at coaching them up. He knows the Midwest and the Midwestern recruiting grounds. It's a good hire. I mean, it's a much better hire than Tim Brewster was. I mean, I, 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 it's a good hire. I was kind of hoping they'd go Randy Shannon, but it's a good hire.
Satchmo, did Indiana settle on a coach? Because I saw rumors that they were interviewing somebody, and the name escaped me. I lost track of that one. Did they settle on a coach?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Yeah, not
were you
not
surprised
that, I'm aware
that they
of.
Were you surprised that the Hoosiers just sort of up and fired Carmichael or that his name?
Indiana's just been bad, it's kind of, and when you're bad, and they've been bad for long enough that they need someone to turn it around. And Indiana's another place where I'd go in, and Randy Shannon is a name I'd consider.
Yeah, definitely, for sure, with Indiana. I think they're screaming for a high-profile coach there.
Yeah, they need someone who's going to make football relevant again there.
Yeah.
They just do. And Randy Shannon is a good hire. Now, Randy Shannon is from Miami. And he's a Miami guy, and who knows whether he'd actually pack up and leave South Beach and head to the cold, wintry Midwest. That's a separate issue. You got to at least pick up the phone and call. You just do. He's a good coach. Or if you're looking for a young and hungry guy, take a look at Treadwell. I mean, I don't want him to leave Michigan State. That's a good fit at Indiana.
Now, you talk about something interesting there, Satchmo. Two former Spartan assistants running the big teams at Indiana. Tom Crean with basketball, and if it happened, Don Treadwell. Oh, my goodness, Satchmo. That would make things very interesting for this so-called rivalry that we're going to be having with Indiana every year in football, for sure.
Yeah, the so-called rivalry. As long as we win the game, I'll be happy.
The old brass spittoon. The old brass spittoon, Satchmo, is what we play for.
Back in the days when everyone was chewing tobacco.
Before we go, I didn't want to lose track of this. The Heisman Trophy is won by one Cam Newton of Auburn. Did you have thoughts about that?
Best player in college football. He should win it.
Best player. Were you surprised, though, Satchmo, that the voters – were you thinking the voters might shy away a little just because of the Reggie Bush situation?
That's not their purview. They got to look at who the best player in college football is. I mean, well, let's put it to you this way. If you don't give it to them and nothing happens, then you're a complete douche.
Yeah.
Because the best player in college football didn't win it. And if you give it to him and it proves out he did something, then at least you gave it to the best player at the time.
Yeah.
As Michael James said about Cam Newton, he says, I would have voted for him twice. And that's sort of the way I feel about Cam Newton.
Well, he is a tremendous player, and I think you have to, if you're a Heisman voter, you really have to put your blinders on and, unless something did come down where, there was found to be some sort of, something real with what was going on with his father. I think you have to put your blinders on and say, okay, we need to just evaluate this guy based on, what he's done on the field. And even going back to the Reggie Bush situation with the Heisman Trophy, I can't fault the voters because they had no idea what was going on. I mean, some people make the Heisman Committee to be out to be like, oh, well, they just gave it to this guy and they knew, blah, blah, blah. Well, they don't know anything. They're just evaluating, okay, Reggie Bush, when he played on the football field, was an outstanding player. And so that's what they're, rewarding him for. And I think the other thing, too, is, and I appreciate this about the Heisman Committee, they vote for players whose teams do well. And I appreciated that, Cam Newton and LaMichael James were up there. And even the Boise State quarterback, Kellen Moore, Boise State fell a little this year with the loss to Nevada. But, they do reward teams as well. And that's why, the Michigan fans can whine about Denard Robinson. Well, let's face it, a 7-5 quarterback, 7-5 team with a good quarterback is not going to win the Heisman.
Well,
that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and I'm going to take a little issue with you here, is if you're the best player in college football, you should win, period. I don't care if your team is 1-9 or 10-0. But Denard Robinson wasn't the best player in college football. Bottom line,
well,
is
no, he wasn't
as he wasn't as good as the other guys on stage. And here, in my opinion, is why he wasn't as good as the other guys on stage. When the defenses got tough, Denard couldn't do anything.
Right.
He was ineffective when the defenses got tough. Whereas those guys that were on stage when the defenses got tough were still very effective. And to me, that's the difference. And that's why, you know, Denard Robinson is definitely merits Heisman talk because he's a statistical freak. But when you break down those statistics and look at how he performed against the better defenses, the performance just weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't there for a variety of reasons. They weren't there because of injury. They weren't there because the defenses were good. They just weren't there. I mean, look at Denard Robinson's performance against Michigan State. He only put up 17 points on the board.
Right. Well, that's absolutely a good point. You know, when the defenses were tougher, Robinson wasn't there. But having said that, though, he certainly grew into that role this year. And, you know, the Big Ten will be, you know, assuming Michigan comes back with exactly what they're coming back with again next year, you know, people will be fearing Denard Robinson and that Michigan offense because it has improved and it can score. So
Rich Rod
has that on his side.
Yeah, it is. It's an explosive offense that gathers up yards a chunk at a time. It's fun to watch, and they move the ball on everyone this year. And this was Denard's first year as a starter. Next year, he's going to be much better. He's going to be better at throwing the ball. He's going to be better at reading defenses. He's going to be much better. That offense next year is going to be awesome. And if they can find a running back, a Steve Slayton, if you will, who went along with Pat White, if they can find a running back to go along with Denard Robinson. They've already got the receivers. Oh, boy. That offense is going to be unstoppable next year. Because, I mean, this year, if Denard didn't do it, it didn't happen, and they've got to fix that a little bit going forward. They just do.
One more thing on Michigan here. You know, Satchmo wandering around that hockey game yesterday. Certainly, the fans were excited to have that hockey game there, but obviously, as you can imagine, topic number one on their mind was, who's going to be our football coach after January 1st? And, you know, it's interesting because when you talk to a lot of their supporters and, you know, even their non-graduate fans who take an interest in the team that we know about, the Walmart types, if you will, they all say, well, you know, our teams weren't like this with Lloyd and Bo and Gary. And what they're saying is we had a good offensive line and defensive line, and we had a good defense. And, you know, they do make a good argument in that respect. So I can
see. But you want to know what? When Lloyd was on his way out the door, all U of M wanted was, we want an exciting team that's going to contend for the national championship. We're tired of barely winning the Big Ten. We're tired of not winning the Big Ten. We're tired of not being in the BCS talk. We're tired of not being one of the best teams in the country. And
yeah.
So that was their stated goal, wasn't it? I mean, it wasn't just to have a good football team. They wanted greatness for the University of Michigan, and they felt like U of M football wasn't great anymore. And not only did they feel like U of M football wasn't great anymore, they felt like U of M football wasn't even aspiring to be great. You know, they wanted people to be talking about Michigan football, and that wasn't happening. And part of the reason why is that, you know, they weren't running the funky spread offense, they weren't putting on monster numbers, they weren't getting Heisman Trophy candidates, all this sort of stuff. And so they wanted someone like Rich Rod who was going to come in and put an exciting offense. And the idea was Rich Rod was going to build the type of team that once he was done rebuilding them, that was going to compete for national championships, not just Big Ten championships. And if you look at the way the team is right now, the way Rich Rod's rebuilding the team, it's tracking under his normal track. First year, abysmal. Second year, improvement. Third year, bowl team. And fourth year, really good. That's his normal track record.
Yeah, well, they may be making a hasty decision here and getting themselves in another mess. But you know what, Satchmo? We're Spartan fans, and our program's okay right now. So
our program's okay. Our program is okay. Our program is in good hands, and you know, and that's good for us. Greg Jones, All-American linebacker again, DB. What'd you think?
Oh, that very well deserved. And I said this to you after the Alamo Bowl last year. I said this kid will be back, and he'll be an All-American, and very well deserved honor for him.
Yeah, I'm pleased for him. I'm happy for him. Out of curiosity, what type of pro prospect do you think he's going to make?
Well, that's a good question. I was thinking about that after their last game with Penn State, and I think he at least goes by the second round, Satchmo. I really do. I think, he's not, and maybe I'm wrong, but he doesn't strike me necessarily as a top 10 pick, but I could see teams, you know, especially that want to fill a need defensively, of going after him. And I think he could be, you know, I think he could be in a couple years a difference maker and somebody that, whose name you hear a lot on Sundays in the NFL.
Yeah, I spent some time thinking about this, and I sort of view him as a third rounder. And the reason I view him as a third rounder is he's a tackling machine, but that seems to be, and there's nothing wrong with being a tackling machine. You need tackling machines, but he's average in defending the pass. He's not a very good cover linebacker. So he's average in doing that. He's not a great blitzer. He's an okay blitzer. And so there's still a lot of room for growth and improvement on him. I think he needs work as an NFL player. And I sort of envision first or second rounders as people that can step into the lineup right away. And people who have potential but need some polish as the third-round variety, and I think he slips into that category for me. Great, great college linebacker, needs some work to succeed in the pros, though.
I could see that. I could see that. Falling into the third round, I could see that. And I guess the other thing you could say is, he have the speed necessary for the NFL right now? And I think the answer would probably be no. But, you know, it depends on what he goes to at the all-important combine that they do in the winter.
Yeah.
So, we'll see how it goes. But definitely is going to get drafted. And what about Eric Gordon, Satchmo? Do you see him getting drafted, or is he more of one of those guys that could walk on somewhere onto an NFL squad?
I can see him getting drafted late. Fifth or sixth round pick. I could see him getting drafted, and another guy I could see getting drafted late or walking onto a team is Aaron Bates.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are three likely pros out of this team. Those are the three, and the guy to me that has an outside chance of being a pro is Keyshawn Martin, but he'd have to do it as a return guy. And then win a spot in as a wide receiver, but he'd have to start off as a return guy.
Now, Keyshawn, if I'm not mistaken, he's a junior right now, right? He has one more year.
Yeah, that
no?
is true. I thought he was a senior.
We'll have to check that.
We'll have to check that.
Okay, yeah, I thought he was a junior, but I could be wrong.
Okay, you tend to be
Mark
right
Dell
about those.
Mark Dell and B.J. Cunningham, I think, are seniors, though. I think we lose those guys after the bowl game. Yeah, so we have some growing to do at receiver. Not that we can't do it, but, that'll be an interesting thing for next year. And I guess after the bowl game, we can we can start to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we'll save next year for after the bowl game, along with our Florida travel report. that's a good thing to say for next year. But I think from a pro standpoint, I think Norman is good. Jones is good. I think Aaron Bates will also go. And I think that's about it for the Michigan State NFL prospects. But I think that's something you're going to see changing because you can see the program improving. And one of the things that's improving about the program is, if you remember in the Saban years, we were placing all sorts of people in the pros. And NFL draft day was a fun day for us because Michigan State players were, you'd get three or four or five players drafted every year. And that's how you could tell the program was on the upswing. And I think you can start to see that again with Michigan State football. Not this year, but in the coming years. All right, that's it for Sparty Talk, everyone. We'll come back at you again next week with some more football talk, more basketball talk, more hockey talk. We'll hit Spartan Nation hard. We'll hit Spartan Sports hard, and we'll have a good time doing it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.